Thanks, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, Mark Carman's going to join us. We'll talk about the Chicago Cubs without Wilson Contreras. The star catcher, the young catcher, pulled up limping, and he is now on the disabled list with a hamstring issue. Hopefully, and we'll talk to Carman about, you know, there's some thoughts that it wasn't as bad as they expected, so that the catcher could have a shorter stint on the DL. But these are the kind of moments when you're a Chicago Cubs fan and you have a season in which it hasn't gone the same as the year before, where you're only a game or two up, or one of these injuries could send you home, you know. And so it's very interesting. So I think you're there's a little bit of stress and tension in Cubland tonight. So Carm will join us. We'll talk about that and the Bears game. Mitchell Trubisky looking good as the backup quarterback. The rookie has thrown two touchdown passes, or I think he ran one in, or someone ran it in, but he two touchdown drives. So we'll talk with Carm about that. Well, my next guest is back with us tonight after putting out her 10th novel. It's coming out on Tuesday. Balloon drop for you, Stacey.
Thank you.
What happened to the balloons, Pete? I thought we were going to string those up. We lost? We don't have any balloons?
No balloons.
Oh. Chicago author Stacey Bayless was in studio with us last year for her book Wedding Girl. We talked about her work in the foodie lit genre. And she continues that work with her latest How to Change a Life. Bayless has made her name with her prolific writing, but also for her ability to craft romantic tales around the world of food. In this book, not only does she make her main character a chef, but she also tackles friendship, reunions, and, well, the list of things that we said we'd accomplish by the age of 40. In this case, they got about a year to do
yeah,
so.
Yeah, they got about 9 months.
Stacey Bayless, welcome back. Good to see you.
It's so good to see you.
Thanks so much. This comes out on Tuesday, which is so great. Like I earlier in the show, I was like, I think this is out. I was confused. I think it's out today. And I'm like, hey, it's not even out yet.
Not even out
this
yet.
This is exclusive.
Exactly.
Talk about this because you were in here a year ago.
Yeah.
It's amazing that you're able to write so quickly with such quality. Where does that come from, the idea of being able to churn out a 10th novel at such a, I mean, at such a young age?
Well, thank you. I think for me, some of it is that I'm very lucky in that I'm writing contemporary fiction set in Chicago today with heroines that are going through much of the same stuff that I'm going through in my life, or tackling issues that I think about or that my peer group are focused on. It is not, you know, I'm not George R. R. Martin. I'm not creating whole worlds and creatures and foreign languages. And, you know, I mean, really.
You kind of are. I don't want to make a big deal, but you kind of are.
I'm just saying my girls tend to live in Logan Square in my house. So I think that part is helpful. I also think I try very hard not to be too precious about what I'm doing. It can be really easy when you're making your life as an artist to kind of put a little too much emphasis on the artist part. And at the end of the day, it's a job. And so I have to get up and I have to put words on paper. Right. And sometimes they're good and sometimes they're not. And sometimes I keep them and sometimes I don't. I'm not very good at some of the discipline part. So I think my procrastinating helps me, because a lot of the books come out in sort of a panic before deadline.
I was going to say, if you're a procrastinator, I mean, there's a lot of procrastinators like, I'm still working on my second novel. I mean, you're on your 10th novel in what, 10 years or so?
My first book came out in 2004. So,
I mean, it's amazing to think about that. I mean, when you are working in such a prolific fashion, is it better for the evolution of your work? I mean, are you, because it's so fresh in your mind to say, I know what I'm going to do better. I'm going to work on in this area or that area because it's fresh. Or is it difficult to sort of put separation between the work?
I think it depends. I try really hard for every book to be as different as it can be in terms of the focus of the story or the conflict in the story as the book before. So for me, that keeps it fresh and that kind of keeps me going back to the page, because if I bore myself, then I'm going to bore my readers. And also I'm the person that if I step away from something for too long, then getting back into it, it's that kind of grind. So I think for me, always having something coming up, always having the next project kind of tapping you on the shoulders or finishing one project has been helpful in getting the work out.
as I mentioned, and we talked about this last time you were on, the foodie lit genre, a genre that I was unfamiliar with, this idea of fiction and novels around the world of food. You're a star in this genre. This is a genre that is becoming more and more just of value because more and more people want to get into not just the world of food, but the foodie culture.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, I think culinary fiction, which is sort of how I think about what I write, I think the way that we cook, the way that we eat, the way we feed ourselves, the way we feed the people in our lives tells you a lot about who somebody is, right? So you know that you have the friends where if something's going wrong for you, their first impulse is to take you out for a drink versus the friends you have that come over and they've made you a casserole, right? And I think there's value in all of that, but you know, I don't trust books that don't have food in them. We have to make 200 decisions about food all day, every day.
Yeah,
so anytime I read a book, I'm like, when do they eat dinner? Like, I would like to see a meal.
This is a complete aside, but I saw the movie A Ghost Story, which was with Casey Affleck. And there's a scene in it that's very controversial because it shows Casey Affleck's character dies, and that's not a plot. That's just what happens right at the beginning.
Right.
And there's a scene in which the Rooney Mara, she's the main character, she gets a casserole dropped off a pie, and she eats it. And she eats it in real time. It's a 7-minute scene of her just eating.
Yeah.
And everyone was just like, people walked out of it. You know, they just couldn't handle the fact because it is a very long scene to watch somebody eat.
7 minutes but, I mean, is a long just, scene.
You're absolutely right, because it's like the conversation we had about it was that, yeah, people eat.
People eat. People eat. And so to me, that's sort of that's one way into a character. So I write first person perspective, and the problem with that is that every one of us has these filters that we see ourselves through.
Yeah.
And so the way that a reader can kind of get a little bit more insight into the lives of those characters, you can see how they interact with other characters in the book. You can hear other characters talk to them about their perceptions of who they are and what they do. But also there is that thing about food, that our relationship with food is constant, and it's all day and it's every day, and it changes depending on your mood and what's happening in your life and how you interact with other people. So food for me has just always become that way of the reader being able to see who the character is. And often the way that my heroines either cook or eat changes significantly over the course of the book and follows that.
Well, arc. I mean, that's a big part of this book about change from a main character who's a chef who's it seems to be happy. You know, that I mean, there seems to be at the beginning of the book, she's happy, she's a chef, she's successful through the course of the novel, and sort of being pushed by some of her friends, she recognizes that maybe she's not, or maybe she just needs a change, and that sort of that metamorphosis, that idea that we go from maybe we feel like we're in a good moment, and that, you know, as we move on and things are kind of given to us, that there are better moments.
Yeah, I think some of it is that realization that content and happy are not exactly the same thing. And there's value in both. But I think she recognizes she's got a very contained, small life. She's a personal chef. So she works for a family. She has one other client. She's very close to them. But in a certain way, she lives a little vicariously through them. She's got her dog. She's got her mom and her aunt who live nearby. She's got her best girlfriend from culinary school. And that's sort of her whole life. And she's not upset about that, and she isn't pushing herself to do or be more. But when she gets reconnected with her two best friends from high school and they kind of do a semi-drunken bucket list bet for before they all turn 40, it explodes her life in some really interesting ways. And some of the book is kind of about it is never too late to live your best life.
Yeah, right.
And if you're content in what you're doing now, that's fine. But there's a certain complacency in contentedness. And if you're not challenging yourself, you know, it's never too late to pick up a hobby or learn a new language or try something different. It doesn't have to be major life changes.
Right.
But, you know, that to me was the story.
And the big, you know, I mean, talking about sort of the idea of putting the list together. You know, this as a writer, do you look at that and say, okay, I'm fascinated with lists. Or I've always had this, my life has changed about, you know, wanting to put bucket lists together and get things accomplished by a certain age. I mean, as a writer, do you approach it that way and then weave it into the characters? How important is this idea of the bucket list or the list that were that are put together by the friends in this book.
Right. Well, I think the thing for me that was interesting about this was it was important to me that the list was a combination of her own list of goals and things she wanted for herself, but also that her friends helped make for her. So the three friends each have sort of three goals that they put out for themselves, right? I want to know more about my personal finances. She wants to get a little bit healthy and more physically active. She's a former athlete who's kind of let herself go a little bit. She wants a new creative outlet besides the cooking. But it also, the other friends put things on the list on your behalf, which is you saying, your friend saying to you, here's what I think you need. So for her, her list was very internal, right? Very small. Her friends' lists were about, you're going to have to start dating again. You haven't dated in a really long time, and you're going to have to get out there. That is not something she thought she wanted for herself.
It's a really interesting concept. Beyond the novel, I mean, just this concept of, we always think of bucket lists or any sort of list that we make for ourselves and things that we want to accomplish to be internal. But the idea of having a select group of friends be able to push you or to put things on that list to say, I think you should do this. That's something I haven't heard much about when the conversation of bucket list come up.
Yeah, well, I think some of it for me is I recognize that we are often more ambitious for our friends or our family, the people that we love, than they are for themselves. And some of that is we may see more in them than they are able to see in themselves. Yeah. And so I liked that idea of, you know, because in certain moments, she then has to look at the list that they created for her and say, why didn't I want that for myself? Why didn't I want to challenge myself in that way? What is it about what I think of myself or my abilities that I didn't put it on my own list? But I do think there is something about looking at the people that know you and that you trust and that you care about, who care about you, and saying to them, you make my bucket list. What do you think I should do?
Do you ever see a moment in your writing career where, I mean, because I mean, How to Change Your Life and also Wedding Girl. And I remember this from Wedding Girl that it was, yes, it was about food, but it really was about romance. It was about love. And it was about finding something like, not unlike this book, but finding mm-hmm. something new, challenge yourself, pushing forward. Do you ever find yourself getting out of this genre and just writing about those themes without food, without the idea of food around it? Because, I mean, what you just mentioned, friendship. Yeah. You know, care, love, romance. I mean, those are all things that make great books. You don't necessarily have to have them cooking in it.
Well, that's true to a certain extent. So here's a little something about the publishing industry. When you start publishing, publishers like to be able to fit you into something that is marketable. So when I started writing this, you know, sort of culinary fiction, that was something that was easily marketable and something that I was doing a good job of. In my, sixth book, the character had a very adorable dog, and they put the dog on the cover of the book. Now, I do not have a dog. I do not want a dog. I love dogs. My sister's dog is one of my best little buddies, but then I send him home. But they put the dog on the cover, and all of a sudden they went, oh, the dog on the cover is really good. So now you write the food books with the dogs on the cover, which then turned into, you know, now if I was going to have a dog, I'm a rescue girl, right? I'm an adopt, don't shop kind of girl. And so the dog in that book was written as a mutt. But then my publisher said, by the way, there is no stock photography.
For rescue dogs.
And so now I became the food books with the dogs on the cover, and they all had to be purebred so they could find stock photography for the cover. So would I write a book that was not necessarily focused on food or not focused in the same way? I could and I would. But by the same token, I've spent 10 books building an audience that has a certain expectation of me. I'm hoping to be moving not a big step, but a little baby step in terms of my next book, which is a little bit different and will still have some food themes, but not quite as central. And will also have some elements of historical fiction.
That's interesting because, you know, I've talked to some thriller writers. We've had some people through who talk about the notion of getting out of the genre. And when you develop a relationship to the reader, there's an expectation of what you're going to write next in this way that they they will never look the gift horse in the mouth, but they also, it's somewhat limiting. If they want to say, I want to do a nonfiction book about the Vietnam War, like, no, no, you don't get to do that. Somebody else does that. I mean, it's similar in that regard that, you know, there needs to be something that honors the relationship you have with your audience that you built over 13
right.
years.
For me, it's about taking small steps that bring along the readers that I already have, but also open me up to new readers that might not know me from this work. I might, you know, I'm hoping that the next book, because it's partially historical, will open me up to some people who are more interested in historical fiction and may not be so interested in the culinary part, but the parts of that that will be related to food will be okay with them, and the, you know, and the historical parts will be okay with my existing readers. We'll see what happens.
The book is called How to Change a Life. It's a new novel from Stacey Bayless. She was the author of Wedding Girl, who she was in, Stacey was in last year talking about it. It's got recipes in the back, which is great. And it also, and it was, I kind of mentioned when you came in studio, I'm like, you're also baking on Instagram.
Yeah.
Which is, it's awesome to see that. It's like so many different levels of you coming at us, from your personal writings to your personal food. So, Stacey Bayless, great to have you here in studio. Congrats on the book, which comes out on Tuesday, How to Change Your Life. And there'll be, I'm sure you'll be reading all over.
Next week, Tuesday night, I'm at Anderson's in Naperville at 7 o'clock. On Thursday night, I'm at Bookends and Beginnings in Evanston at 6 o'clock. And next Friday night, I'm at City Lit in Logan Square at 6:30.
There you go. It starts. Stacey, great to see you.
Thanks, Justin.